Welcome, welcome. I'm Bill Tinker, and you're listening to Dialysis Talk on Blog Talk Radio, where we discuss the healthcare issue of dialysis patients along with other present-day healthcare issues. Dialysis Talk is brought to you by dialysis advocates. The information and opinions expressed by our guests are theirs alone and do not reflect the opinion of Dialysis Talk or dialysis advocates. We have a great show lined up for you tonight, and with that, let's turn it over to tonight's host.
Hello, everyone, and we're really glad to be back on the air, and we are blessed and honored to have Sigrid Fry Revere. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Oh, good. And she's here to talk about something that is near and dear to every dialysis patient's heart, and that is her organization, which is Stop Organ Trafficking Now, and also the Living Organ Donor Fund. We're really blessed to have you on our show. And my first question to you is, what inspired you to do these organizations for dialysis patients?
Well, given how hard it is to get a transplant and how for many dialysis patients a transplant is the best treatment option, we decided that it was time to lobby Congress for, believe it or not, the rights of organ donors, primarily kidney donors, because we realized that it actually costs to be a kidney donor. Not medical costs, those are covered by the transplant recipient's insurance, but out-of-pocket expenses like travel, lodging, and lost wages. So we started lobbying, and that's what Stop Organ Trafficking Now is about. We're lobbying Congress to help Americans. In other words, make it easier for Americans to donate organs. And that would help stop organ trafficking because, believe it or not, Americans are one of the worst offenders on buying organs on the black market. Very wealthy,
really?
Americans. Yeah, it's really kind of sad. And the other organization, the American Living Organ Donor Fund, is actually starting to help living donors now. We actually help them meet their out-of-pocket expenses. So someone who is nice enough to be willing to be a living donor does not have to pay a financial penalty or carry a financial burden along with their willingness to donate.
How is that organization different from others? Is it because it is a charitable organization that donates to the donor?
That is one way it's different. Most of the organizations that are out there are actually organizations for transplant patients, and they might help a donor a little bit on the side if they can, but they mostly provide education and support for transplant patients. And while that's very good, I think that we've neglected the organ donors. And by being like having dialysis advocates, we are donor advocates, and we care about their needs and their concerns. And by helping them and giving them a voice in Congress, we hope to make more transplants available. So, for example, if someone out there has a relative or a friend who's thought about donating but says, you know, I'd have to be out of work for 6 weeks and I can't afford that, we step in and help. We're there to say, we'll help you cover your expenses. We'll pay you your lost wages as a grant so that you can donate.
That's great. Now, how do you decide who to help? Is it based on their financial eligibility or just the need itself?
Actually, it's based on need itself. We discovered that income alone is not really the issue with living donors. The issue is how much discretionary funds they have. Like when I wanted to donate, I'm a middle-class American, but I was actually prevented from donating, and my recipient died because I had kids in college. I had three kids in college. I had a double mortgage on my house, and I didn't have, they said, the support group to have people take care of my farm, because I run a farm, to take care of my farm while I recovered from surgery. And a farm is a place, you know, you can't go lifting 60-pound bales of hay after you have a nephrectomy. So it was going to be at least 8 weeks where I would need help. And they wouldn't let my recipient or anyone else help me, because there are rules against how you can help donors. And I think that's one reason we might be the first charity to do this, because clearly Congress intended to help donors, but the wording is such that some people, you know, want to take it very literally, and so that makes it hard to help donors. But we're taking it more in the spirit of what Congress wanted and saying, you know, we're going to help donors in whatever way we can that is covering actual costs. So if we're covering actual costs that they have, that's not paying someone for an organ, because that's what Congress was afraid of buying and selling organs. So if you have a charity that helps you meet your expenses, that's clearly not what they intended to prevent.
Now, Sigrid, is it only for kidneys, kidney transplantation?
Well, that's another way we're a little bit different than a lot of organizations out there. The National Organ Transplant Act in 1984 made it illegal to help living donors, a whole bunch of different donors, with money. And that was for kidneys, which is the largest group, but also livers, intestines, lungs, pancreas. The only people we really can't help is heart transplants, because those you absolutely have to get from a cadaver. But science has advanced that now they can take a part of a liver or part of a lung and transplant that. And those are much more risky surgeries than kidney nephrectomies, but they're doing them. They're doing them. So we're willing, and even bone marrow was actually one of the areas where the act prohibited helping donors in certain ways. So anyone who is a living donor of any kind, the American Living Organ Donor Fund will help.
Now, how do you decide who to help?
Well, one of the criteria is need, as you said, which is not necessarily income-based, because we don't think anyone should have to use up their savings or go into debt in order to donate. So there's the average out-of-pocket expenses for living donors is $5,000.
Okay.
So their recipient can help them with that, but a lot of times the recipients don't have that much money. And so if the recipient doesn't have it and the donor doesn't have it himself or herself, then we step in and help with whatever the costs are. Now, that's the average cost. So if someone has to fly back and forth across the country with, you know, kids or something, it gets much more expensive. But in doing research, we found out that 20% of Americans don't have any savings at all, and that only 8% of Americans have $5,000 that they can spend beyond their living costs in a month. Mm-hmm. And since you're going to be out for 6 weeks, it means that over 90% of it's a lot of people who would be hard for them to be living donors.
Well, who have you helped so far? How many?
Well, so far, we've approved three applications. One of the surgeries has already taken place. And that person was, she started out as an in-home aide for a woman who was dying, and that's how she met her family, including her grandchildren. And after the lady died, the person whose name was Stephanie became a housekeeper and started her own housekeeping business. And then she found out that one of the grandchildren needed a kidney, and she'd become close to the family, so she wanted to help. But she had her own business, right? So if she stopped working for 6 weeks, there would be no way to support her family. She had a son. And so she did a FundMe campaign, which is one of those crowdsourcing things you do on the Internet to try to get money.
Yes, yes.
And she got $430, which wasn't anywhere near enough. And then she found out about us, and we gave her 6 weeks' worth of her average income so that she could recover without worrying about how to pay her rent or where how to buy food for her and her son. And that transplant took place on January 6th, and it was an exchange. So we actually helped two people. Stephanie made two transplants possible. And then we have another one happening on January 27th, which is a brother and a sister, where she's going to lose her job when she donates. So we're kind of worried about her. But we'll give her 6 weeks of what her wages would have been. She's going to get unemployment, so the difference between her unemployment and her wages we're going to give her, and then hopefully she'll be able to find a job quickly. And then the last person we're helping, her transplant hasn't been scheduled yet because she's a linchpin donor, which means she is an altruistic donor who doesn't know any of the people who need a kidney. But she's going to start a chain donation. So, you know, she could be helping 5 people, she could be helping 20 people, but we don't know yet.
Now, explain the linchpin method.
Okay, what that is if I want to donate to my sister, but I'm not a match for my sister,
mm-hmm.
the hospital finds another pair that wants to donate that aren't a match, and then they match me with that person, and then maybe that person's donor is not a match for my sister, but a match for someone else. And so they create a chain that way where they find better matches or people who are matches for someone who needs a kidney. But since everybody wants to make sure their relative gets a kidney, they won't agree. Like, I won't agree to give to someone who's not my sister unless I'm sure my sister gets a kidney.
Gets a kidney. Okay, I see.
So they need someone who is not related, who is a pure altruistic donor, to start the chain in motion. So that's what a linchpin donor is. They've had chains as long as 40 people.
Wow.
But often it's like what Stephanie's was. Stephanie wanted to give to Takaya, the granddaughter of the woman she worked for, but she wasn't a match. So the transplant center found someone who was a match for Takaya for whose relative Stephanie was a match. So that was just a swap. So that was just, you know, two transplants where people exchanged their donors, right? But it can be, like I said, the chain can get very, very long because...
And a lot of people can get helped at the same time.
That's right. A lot of people get helped at the same time just by having one person who says, I will donate my kidney. I don't have a relative I want to donate it to. I'm just going to help make this possible, make this chain possible.
Awesome.
So we're going to help her. And she's got a job and her... boss promises her that her job will be there when she comes back, but she has unpaid leave. So we're going to help her cover her bills while she's recovering.
great. Can you tell me how people can contact your charity?
Well, it's the American Living Organ Donor Fund, and so you can Google that or just the first initials. It could be www, American, so A, L for living, D for donor, and F for fund.org. And so you can get to us that way. We also just finished a campaign that was Save 30 Lives in 30 Days. So that's another way people can find it, is if they Google Save 30 Lives in 30 Days. Because unfortunately, in the U.S., there's almost one person dying an hour because they can't get a transplant. So
that's true.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. So, you know, we're chipping away at it. I mean, we're trying to get the federal government to step in and help more people. But it was actually a radio host who said, well, why don't you try to start saving lives now? So we said, you know, you're right. You know, one person at a time. Let's do what we can with a private charity while we're telling the government they need to do more.
I think that's great. That gives even me hope. I've been doing dialysis myself for 15 years, so I like the way that organization works as far as the chain is concerned, because mm-hmm. everyone is not eligible to give to the person that they want to, and if they can trade up and get more people in, that's even better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what about the Stop Organ Trafficking now?
Well, that's the organization we have that's lobbying Congress. And we did a little bit of lobbying. And, you know, the political system is pretty depressing because we had a very big law firm that spent 5 months helping us figure out a bill where the government, Medicare, would actually save money because, you know, people who are on dialysis a long time, they have comorbidities and they become very expensive patients for Medicare.
Yes.
And it can actually be cheaper for Medicare to give someone a transplant than
exactly.
to keep them on dialysis. So we figured out a proposal where and a bill, and we wrote up a draft bill and everything, where Medicare would pay living donors their expenses up to, you know, whatever, up to like $10,000, which is twice the average, but, you know, it'd have to be real expenses that they have. And in doing so, they would make transplants possible, just like we're trying to make transplants possible. And Medicare would actually save money by doing that. Because the difference between paying for lots of years of dialysis and giving someone a transplant who then only has to buy the meds and isn't as sick is a huge savings for Medicare.
Yeah.
But they need to help get more living donors. And one study from Canada showed that 24% of family members who said yes to donate change their mind for financial reasons. So think if we could have 25% more kidneys available, you know, that we could reduce the list by that much. And obviously, if the federal government stepped in and provided the benefit, you know, it would be available to more people. There'd be a lot more money available, and they'd save money at the same time. And we just, you know, we went up on Capitol Hill and said, this is a win-win. And, you know, politicians are jaded. They are very, you know, like, what's in it for me?
Exactly.
And it was very depressing. We're going to keep trying. But, you know, you and I talked before the show about voting bloc. That was one of the questions. Who is the voting bloc that we're appealing to when we do this? And I said, well, everybody on dialysis and all their relatives and the people who care for them. And they said, well, you know, do they have an organization like AARP or, you know, somebody like that that has lobbying pressure? And, you know, Arlene is trying, and
exactly.
And we're trying, but, you know, it's going to take a while for us to get enough momentum to get them to take us seriously.
I think what we're doing, we're trying to become the Susan G. Corman for dialysis and kidney
Absolutely.
Failure. You
Absolutely.
Know, because that's what how she starts. She started, and, you know, we've been invisible for so long as dialysis patients for several reasons. You know, we have been invisible. I think a lot of times people don't look at you as chronically ill, or
right.
they just don't know a lot about dialysis. Dialysis has been in the background for so long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, the treatment that we receive is even at times substandard because no one cares, and it's so hard to get dialysis patients to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we need to do. We have to stand up. We have to be seen. We have to be noticed. This is what's going on. And, you know, for years and years, you know, we've just been sitting in a chair for 3 to 4 hours, get out the chair and continue to go. The lack of respect is to the point that we can come into the center and someone is missing and no one even acknowledges that they've passed on.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know,
it's very,
that's
very
how
hard.
Invisible. Yes, that's how invisible we are.
Mm-hmm.
You could be sitting beside someone for years,
Well, you
and
know,
I
just had a thought, you know, maybe someone could organize, like talk to your local senator or local House of Representative person and just give them a tour of the dialysis center. Most of them probably don't even know what it's like there.
They have absolutely no idea.
Right.
You're
and,
right.
You
That's
know,
a good
you
idea.
Could call the office and say, hey, you know, you have to make sure it's okay with your center, but say, you know, why don't you send the senator down here? Why don't you send our representative? We vote.
Exactly.
Have him come and visit us. Have him come and see what our life is like. You know, I mean,
exactly.
that I don't think that would be
idea.
Too hard to arrange. And because you're absolutely right. They don't understand what it's like. You know, a lot of people don't even connect dialysis with need for a transplant.
Exactly.
A lot of people
exactly.
don't even understand that.
Exactly. They don't know what we're about, what we do, how we do it, you know, that, you know, and what I want for dialysis patients is to realize that you do dialysis. Dialysis doesn't do you. And I think if they could get that and understand, things don't have to change too much. You know, find a center that is open at night if you want to work. I wish I could, but I don't have one in my area. But, you know, or work it around your schedule. Make dialysis not control your complete life. And that for me is what, you know, I just wish people could understand.
And you know, those are options. In Japan, that's how they do it in Japan. Almost all the dialysis centers run overnight.
Overnight.
Yeah.
And I think
so that people can work
in our area. Yeah.
Yeah. And you need a lot more of those so that people's lives don't get as disrupted.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. But then too, honestly, it's a disease to hit the majority, which is minorities.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's the voice right there. No one speaks up for us, nor do we speak up for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I sit in a center where I watch doctors come in and not even know who their patients are.
Oh,
that's sad. They don't know who their patients are because they don't come in and visit. They may come in once a month or once every 90 days. They'll send a nurse practitioner in,
but they themselves won't come in. And they'll stop at someone, and not at my chair. I know my doctor. My doctor's weekly. You know, as if I'm your patient. You don't know. You know, that's how invisible we are, even to our caregivers.
Right.
And that's sad. But,
it is.
You know, this is what we
Well, one thing that it would be easy for your listeners to do if they want is Stop Organ Trafficking Now has a petition on its website. And that petition is to have Congress address these issues. So if they can get online and just sign the petition online, you know, it's just you use your email. You don't have to actually write anything. And that's the Stop Organ Trafficking Now website. And the petition is right there. You can scroll down and click on petition. And because that, too, I mean, we have like 500 people who've signed it. But, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. There are a lot of, there should be a lot more people signing that to prove to Congress that this is an issue that touches a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something a dialysis patient can do easily. You know, I mean, it doesn't take much time to go to your computer and, you know, go to Stop Organ Trafficking Now, the website.
Well, I watched the YouTube video. I watched the video, and I thought that was awesome because it was done right in the center.
Right.
And that's, I remember when we talked earlier, I asked you, how did you get permission to do that? Because, you know, they don't even want us to bring cameras in. So, and I thought it was awesome, though. I thought it was really, really nice because if people get to look at it, and I think we've connected it to our website also, because if people get a chance to look at it, so many people don't know what happens in dialysis. They have no idea what's happening to us while we're sitting in that chair for 3 to 4 hours or even more sometimes.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why we did it that way. And like I said, you know, when you say having a voice, I mean, that's, you know, signing the petition is one way to have a voice. And getting your local representative to tour the center is another way to have a voice. You know, I mean, you can even write your congressman. We have sample letters, too. You can write your congressman and say, hey, don't forget us, you know.
That is a good idea. You have those online?
Yeah, right where the petition is at the end of the petition.
And you can
also
get to the petition from the YouTube video, am I correct?
Well, it has, I don't know if you can, you can't press on it there, but it will give you the address.
Okay.
It will give you the website address at the end for the Stop Organ Trafficking Now website. Which has also the sample letters on it for going to your congressman or your senator.
Okay, all right. I'll be sure that we connect those to our website also.
And
did you have a family member?
What?
Did you have a family member that brought you to dialysis per se or this to the transplant? Was it a family member or just someone close that opened your eyes to what was going on?
My son at 10 months had kidney cancer, and he lost a kidney, but he never needed a transplant or to go on dialysis. He was a lucky little one. But when it happened 25 years ago, they told me he might need dialysis and a transplant. So since I'm a medical ethicist, I've always kept my eye on the issue. And essentially what happened is when he turned 25 and I turned 50, I said, you know, doesn't look like he's going to need a kidney. And if he does, he's got adult siblings now. And I'm getting older, so I want to give to a friend, right? And that's when I had the experience of being excluded, even though I was a medical match and I passed all my psychological tests. They essentially said, you can't donate because you don't have enough money in the bank.
Wow.
And my friend died. And I got so angry, and I thought, I can't be the only person who has this problem. And when I started researching it, you know, I realized that very few Americans have that much money in the bank that they could donate without going into debt. And then there was that Canadian study that said 24% of relatives and friends changed their mind after they said yes, because they couldn't bear the financial burden. And so I started saying, this isn't right, you know, why hasn't anyone heard about this before, and started talking about it and writing about it. I met Arlene, and, you know, we're going to make a difference. We're going to find, I mean, we're making a difference already, you know, one person at a time, right? But we're going to try to make a bigger difference by opening Congress's eyes to this issue. So, if anyone, you know, has a relative or friend who's hesitating to donate because they're worried about time off work and feeding their family or whatever, if they don't have paid leave or not enough paid leave, they should definitely go to the American Living Organ Donor Fund's website, because, you know, we're trying to help as many people as we can. And if there are people out there who want to give a dollar or two or $5 to help us help more people, that's most welcome too, of course. But both, we need living donors who need help, and we need people willing to help us financially so that we can help more people. But as we grow, I think we're also going to work on community awareness, you know, go into churches and community centers and make the general public aware of the fact that they could help save a life, you know, help make someone's life a lot better by helping them get a transplant. And so hopefully we can, you know, educate more people on this great opportunity. But we need to grow. We need to grow as an organization to be able to do that. But we're working on it. We're working on it. And
one step at a time.
Yeah, and it does feel good in the meantime, you know, the donors we've already helped, the transplants we've already made possible, just in a month, you know. And so as we grow, we'll help more people. And maybe Congress will see it and say, you know, the government needs to step in now and make this happen more quickly and for more people.
That would be awesome. I see we have other callers. Is anyone out there that would like to ask a question of Sigrid?
Guess not. Well, they're there. The lines are open if you'd like to ask any questions.
Guess not.
They're there, though. They're there. Just very happy you joined us tonight. And I'm going to, I think that, I know you're already attached to our website. And we need to get people to sign that petition. And to sign the petition, they can go on to Stop Trafficking.
Stop Organ Trafficking Now.
Stop Organ Trafficking Now. Mm-hmm. And is that a .org or .com?
.org.
.org. That's Stop Organ Trafficking Now. .org. And sign
correct.
The petition.
The petition's on there. There's
it.
A yeah, just like scroll like halfway down the home page and you can see there's a petition and there's also sample letters on there.
Well, that would be awesome because you're also in Virginia, am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Appreciate you tonight on the show. And it doesn't look like anyone wants to have any conversation. I see they're there, but no one's saying anything. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us that we perhaps have not covered?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think I know it's really, really hard to speak up, but that's what it takes to get change, you know?
Yes.
And it's got to be the actual dialysis patients, if they at all possibly can, because, and their families, you know, and their relatives and friends. Because sometimes, you know, actually we see all the time, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease in the political system. And if there isn't someone saying, you know, we've got a voice, we're angry, we're not going to vote for you if you don't make it, help us make a change, you know, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, that's what it takes, you know, is you got to get some attention and you know, write your congressman, write your senator, give them tours of your dialysis center so they know what you're going through. Talk to their assistants and their aides. And the more people who speak up, because I go up there and they say, you know, is this a problem? Really? Where? I don't, you know, none of my constituents call me and tell me it's an issue, right? That's why they're always worried about the voting block, right? So if you do start calling your congressman, it's a way to make them aware that we need change.
Yeah, and make them hear. And I think you had a great idea about inviting them into the centers, you know, because our relatives that may, we have relatives that stop us in the centers, and sometimes as far as they get is the door of the center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. They don't get to the back where we are so they can actually see. That's why I like your video, because it shows what Dallas is about. And I'm telling you, a lot of these centers do not let patients' families come no farther than the scale, which is right outside of the actual center where the
mm-hmm.
dialysis is taking place. And they need to see. They need to see this. They need
right.
to see the needles that go in and how the blood comes out and filters and returns back into the body. They need to know. If they don't know, senators need to know. They need to know just what's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I bet you if a senator or congressman asks to make a visit that they'll be let in. You know?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah.
These centers make billions of dollars a day. Billions of dollars a day. Yep. What they do. Yep. Well, Sigrid, thank you so much.
Well, thank you
I
for having me.
It. And I hope that we get to meet soon.
Oh, you're in Virginia too?
Yes, I'm in Virginia. I'm in the Tidewater area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're further south. And I'm up
yeah.
by D.C. Well, it would be nice.
Yeah,
maybe we should get you come up and lobby with us.
Oh, I'd love to. Just keep my number and give me a call.
Yeah, definitely. If we have a hearing or something, I definitely will. I definitely will.
Yeah,
that would be wonderful.
All I said is one thing I like to do, and that's raise and stomp. So that's what I do best.
Write letters. Get friends to write letters. Get friends to sign the petition, and let's see if we can, you know, draw some attention.
I will, and I'll sign the petition as soon as we get off here tonight myself.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, you going
to
move on to something else, or?
Well, tonight that was it. It was you. It
was
all about you. Good night, everyone, and we're glad for those
Good night, Carol.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.